so much fun to
I
talk to
know.
you both.
Do
I miss
tell.
this. We used to do this all the
I know. We'll make it a thing now. That's it
I
now. We'll
think
just
we
have
should.
random chats.
I
Yeah.
think we should.
Maybe
I've
I won't
enjoyed
write so
it.
many questions this time. Maybe I'll just have five.
There's a lot to talk about, always.
Welcome to the Human Hive Podcast, a show about people actively making a difference with, rather than for, each other. The Human Hive is an ever-growing network of individuals and organizations who want to do things differently, who want to change the world collaboratively, make a sustainable impact, and leave a lasting legacy. In every episode, we'll focus on one of the UN Sustainable Development Goals, humanity's collective call to action to solve the most pressing problems facing people and planet today. We'll share how people in our community are addressing those needs right now, and we'll also give you easy, practical, and inexpensive ways to move from wishing the world was different to making it different. This is the place to get started. Join us and join the evolution.
Hello, Hivers. How are we all doing today? I'm Becky. Welcome to our first ever episode and the start of a new adventure. Now, usually we'd be diving into one of the 17 UN Sustainable Development Goals and meeting someone making a real difference in the world right now. But today we're doing something a little bit different because we recognise you might not know who the hell we are. So in this episode, we'd like to share our origin story. A few months ago, I got together with Human Hive co-founders Kate McAllister and Darren Abrahams to ask them to explain themselves. What is the Human Hive? How did they meet? And what got them started on their own journey of change? Let's see what they've got to say.
We are recording.
Hang on. Oh, that's a good idea. I just got distracted massively. Record. Record on this computer. Yes. Right then, let's get into it. Topic one, the basics. So let's start with the basics. What is the Human Hive in your own words?
The Human Hive is an ever-growing global network of individuals and organisations who want to do things differently, who want to change the world, but who want to do things with people, not for people. People who have small change projects that they want to do individually, people who want to contribute to global change and make an impact and leave a legacy, people who want to make a difference. And the Human Hive is now a global collection of people from all kinds of walks of life. There are students and teachers and CEOs and grannies and police officers. And it's just amazing. It's a really amazing group of human beings.
Couldn't have said that better. What I would add to that possibly is that it's a movement as well. It's a philosophy, it's a way of thinking, it's a way of doing things. And the Human Hive is really, it is the sum of all its parts. So it's made up of human beings, and without the human beings, there is no Human Hive.
So add to that, so what is the Human Hive setting out to do? What is its kind of mission in life?
I think the Human Hive makes it easier for people to be the difference they want to see in the world. And we've all been inspired by a quote or a person who's doing something, and we might look at it and go, yes, yes, I know that feeling, but how do I get it from being a feeling to something that I can do? And that's what the Human Hive is. The Human Hive is people who all have skills, expertise, experiences to share. It's a framework for doing things. It's like a massive toolkit for getting yourself from wishing the world were different to making it different yourself.
So what was the difference that you wanted to see in the world, both of you, Kate and Darren, when you first started it? What was that one thing?
When we started, we were working on a very, very particular thing, and it's grown from there. I think we both had visions about how we wanted the world to change, but what brought us together was the very specific thing of what was called in 2015 the refugee crisis, the European refugee crisis. We wanted to make a difference in the lives of people who were going through unbelievable hardship, having to flee their homes because of war, being unwelcome everywhere they went. And in some small way, reach out a human hand to make a difference and support them on their journey. And I think what's happened from there is that it's grown into a much bigger vision of how people who wouldn't necessarily ever meet can come together in safe, productive, forward-thinking ways. I think the way that we want to change the world is to help people to meet each other better. To learn how to be safe together, to learn how to create spaces where everybody feels welcome. And then from that place, to be able to actually co-create, to build a world together rather than just accept what's there because someone else has given it to you.
And you talk there, I know we talk about a lot, it's about meeting people where they're at. And I know that's like a big thing with the human hive. So when, like, who the human hive is for, and you've talked about grannies and refugees and teachers, it is for all humans then? Is that who you see the human hive is for? Just anyone, everyone?
Absolutely. Absolutely. For anybody who's ever thought, I wish someone was doing something about that, or someone who's done some change in their realm that they're comfortable in, but wants to break out and do something bigger and bolder, is for everyone, everybody who wants to make a difference.
Yeah, and I think it comes from a place of kindness, first of all. It's actually people who want to be kind. And take action through that kindness. And then I think like small acts of kindness grow into large actions of change.
That's where I started, oh, I don't know, like 10, 15 years ago, I was just like, oh God, all I ever do is go to work and raise my children and clean my house and there must be more to life than this. And I joined something called the Random Acts of Kindness. I just wanted some joy, some magic, some sparkle in my life. And I started doing these fun, like I made signs with my daughter and I hung them on the tree for people to take. And it felt so good to do it. And so we did stuff like that for a while. And then, I don't know, I wanted to do more. And so then my random acts of kindness became more deliberate and more targeted. And that's when I started doing stuff for refugees who at that point were internally displaced families. In Afghanistan, I think. And then it got closer and closer. And so my actions got more and more targeted and they got more and more personalized. And I suppose that for me, the human hive is helping other people to move along that journey from wanting to add a bit of sparkle and extra kindness and a feeling like they're making a difference into their lives to being able to really change things perceptively and forever. For other people and for themselves, to kind of systemize it and to make it feel like Darren said, to make it feel safe. Sometimes we think, oh, I can't do it. I'm not enough on my own. And maybe you're not enough on your own. Maybe that's true. But together, oh my goodness, we can get a lot done when we all get together. And so that's what the human hive is for, is kind of a flag that we've stuck in the ground to say, if you want to change the world, come over here because we're working on it too.
Yeah, we've always talked about it like a patchwork. It's been part of the way we've described the human hive from the very beginning. It's that you have a piece of the puzzle. And if you bring along your piece, you don't have to worry about everybody else's piece. Your piece will fit because there will be other people who bring something else. And when you bring all those pieces of the puzzle together, you end up having a big solution. I mean, what we found as well when we first started is that another reason people didn't start is because they didn't think that they had all the pieces to the puzzle. They didn't have the right energy or the right skills or the right experience. But you have what you have, and what you have is valuable when it's brought to the right place and the right time with the right people and the right team to support it. So every piece is important.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Just step by step. And we do this with school children and university students and teams of social workers and business teams. I think we are, I don't know, it's something about knowing that just because you're suffering something, it doesn't have to be that way forever. You know, you can affect change in your own life. You can affect how the world feels to you every day and how the world then feels to other people every day. It's quite an empowering thing when someone says, oh no, there's just like a different way of thinking and a different way of doing, and here's some extra people to help you and a toolkit to, you know, like a checklist of things to remember to do. And when you put them all together, the world just feels like a much kinder and more interesting place to be.
And it sounds like you've walked every step of this path yourself. That's what definitely comes across.
Yes.
Oh, yes. I've been gone round and round in circles a few times and wandered into the occasional gorse bush and had to figure out how to get through it to the other side. And so, yeah, all of those journeys come with lots of lessons that you learn, and then you can share them with other people so that you can say it's okay when it starts to feel like this or it starts to feel like that. You can maybe do this or maybe do that, or reach out to these people or read this book, like
proper human stuff, because you've done it.
We decided, while we've been building the hive as we've gone along, is that we needed to test out every step of this journey first before we felt comfortable to say, yeah, you can do that too. Unless we know that this crazy plan that we're putting together can work, it doesn't feel right to offer it to someone else. So we've gradually built over the course of our time together, you know, from a project that we thought was a one-off project when we started, a very, very targeted, very location-specific project, which then grew into something that could go into other places and try out in other places. And it's grown until, you know, at this point, you know, we've got an actual building, we've got a school in the Dominican Republic where Kate is right now. And we're doing much, much bigger things that affect people on a bigger level. So yeah, we've walked this journey. We're continuing to walk this journey as the hive grows.
Dig in to kind of how the hell you two got together. So
it's all Kate's
fault. Firstly, it's all Kate's fault, is it?
Generally speaking, since the age of about 6, it's been my fault.
Yeah.
So what happened? I had been doing what I talked about, collecting clothes, boots, books, toiletries, boxing them up with the kids at school and sending them in crates out to the Middle East to internally displaced families. And then as 2015 got closer and I was seeing the news of these people coming, I was imagining these boys and girls walking here in my daughter's clothes, that I'd sent jumpers and boots and books and stuff, and it wasn't enough. It wasn't what they needed. And they were still having to come. And it really just, it hit me. They could be my children. I could have been born in a different place and this could be happening to me. And what would my children need if they were going through this? They would need somebody to meet them when they arrived. And they would need somebody to give them food and give them a hug and try and help them to settle in and survive and do more than just survive, to live and to thrive. Because if parents are sending their children away across the world, dear God, how bad does life have to be for you to set your children free and hope? So I tried to figure out what I could do with my mum skills and my teacher network and my experience of being with teenagers who are a bit adrift. And I thought, well, I've got stuff that I know how to do to keep them busy and keep them purposeful. And I will find out if any of those skills are needed in the refugee camp in Calais. So I did a little bit of research myself, went to a few meetings of other individuals who were doing this kind of stuff, and we got some ideas together. And I took my ideas and I spoke to this woman, and she went, that's not big enough, darling, that's not gonna do it. It's a nice idea, but this is huge. And then it kind of hit me that I needed to do much more, and it kind of excited me, and I was like, I probably could do much more. Oh my goodness, okay, what could I do? And it sort of started from there. And the problems were myriad, one of which was people weren't allowed to gather and collect. So my idea of sending teachers over to help young people learn French, to give them something purposeful to do while they were queuing in these hour, 2-3 hour long queues for food and clothes and handouts, They could be learning, they could be using their minds, they could be doing something purposeful that was going to set them up for their future in France. And so they kept coming up with these hurdles, right? You can't do this because that, you can't do this because that. So I took it all together and went, well, okay, so if I can't do it like that, how can I do it? How can I do it? And I was like, bingo, I'll buy a bus and I'll turn the bus into a school, and then it won't matter if it rains because they'll be inside the bus. And it won't matter if we need to move because we'll move the bus. And I can drive my teachers into the camp in the bus, and I can store all my stuff in the bus. Oh my God, I'm a genius. Let's buy a bus. And so I just went on eBay, and it turns out you can buy a bus on eBay. So I got all carried away, wrote a crowdfunder, Hi, my name's Kate. I'm a school teacher. I'm going to buy a bus. I'm going to turn it into a school for refugees. And I went to bed thinking, well, that never take off. And then I woke up in the morning and it had gone crazy. The crowdfunder was already full of money and people started getting in touch. And one of those people was Darren. Darren said, I've seen your crowdfunder. I really think I can help. I really want to get involved. Would you like to meet for coffee? And we met for coffee and we just had this meeting of minds and hearts and energy. And we've kind of been best friends and partners in crime ever since.
That's awesome. And I remember the day walking down the seafront with Darren when he told me about this bus and this project and the excitement in his whole being about it. And I have to say, I was like, this is completely bonkers, but I'm so behind it. So it was just fab.
You were right there at the beginning as well.
I was, yeah.
From the very beginning.
Yeah. I have watched you two flourish. It's been fantastic to watch you in your journey. It really, really has. And yeah, it's quite an honour to see where you've arrived right now and to be able to interview you. Like, this is quite cool. It's helped you all the way. So I know you had a meeting of mind, you met for coffee, but what were those kind of strengths that you saw in each other, or the potential or the differences that just kind of clicked in each other?
What I was attracted to in Kate is that total like utter courage to just get up and do something. And that has always like pulled me forward. Like Kate's vision and Kate's energy to kind of to be on the leading edge of change is really exciting. And I think, you know, what I often do is like pull on the reins a little bit sometimes, just to kind of to pull things. Well, I'll let Kate talk about what it is that I bring, but that's what's exciting about work for me of working with Kate. She's someone who really pulls me forward and makes me take action. And she's got tons of energy and a million amazing ideas. Most of which work.
They're just the ones I tell you about.
That's true. They're the ones you tell me about. But those ones, they really were. I mean, ideas around education. I mean, what attracted me first of all to the bus, because I was looking, you know, I was on my own journey at that time, and I was looking to do something to support people. I was, I'd been working in Bosnia on one of the cultural projects that I work on. I came back. And when I got back, and the refugee crisis was all over the news, and I was looking around for something to do, and I saw the bus, and I knew instantly that's what I wanted to do, because it felt, I mean, it felt practical as well as being kind of way out and you know, exciting, because it was about a bus, taking a bus to a refugee camp, but it had a practical element to it. And I think, you know, also what's exciting about working with Kate is that the ideas from the outside might seem big and imaginative, but they're all based in like grounded in practicality. They're grounded in education. You know, to work with Kate, as who is a qualified educator with many years of experience working in really challenging schools, you know that everything she's talking about in education comes from practical experience, comes from actually trying things out there in the trenches, you know, working with people, supporting young people. I mean, it all comes from that place. And so when we looked at bringing education to the refugee camp, having that conversation with Kate and knowing the background that she had, I just knew that we would be able to do it. So yeah, I mean, and also, I mean, we have a lot of fun together.
We do.
Yeah.
We do.
Anyway, that's my side.
So yeah, I have a tendency to get carried away. Who knew? And so Darren keeps me grounded and he holds me together when I am at risk of becoming too fractal, too much in my head, too much of my energy spent. And he reminds me that it's important to stay whole and to do things properly and to finish one thing before I start the next. I don't always completely listen to him, but having him there in my life definitely makes it work better. And he's incredibly forgiving. He's one of the warmest and most forgiving human beings I've ever known. So he helps me to forgive myself when I get things wrong. And he always forgives me when I go too far away or try and do too much or try and spin too many plates at once and I smash a couple. And so we have, and we work, our professional skills are really complementary. So where I have always worked intuitively and from my own lived experience, Darren is very well qualified in trauma and therapies and really well read around how people work. And so that's been really helpful for me to put those two pieces of the puzzle together and to understand why I want to intuitively work in the way that I do, and that it's other people think it's the right way to work too. That's been hugely beneficial for me and given me even more courage. I didn't feel like I really had the courage of my convictions until I met Darren. I would do something and try and keep it quiet. I was much smaller. He's helped me to grow bigger and get bolder and to do more. So we make a good team.
Yeah.
And it started off as we're going to help a handful of people be able to order their own bread in French, right? And ask for shoes that are the right size. That's where it started. And then it got bigger. And then it was, we're going to help the volunteers to find their strength so that they can do more than just fold jumpers and hand out the bread, right? That's being asked for now in perfect French. And it just, every single piece of the journey has been about helping people to level up, to fill themselves up more, to stand up taller, to just be bigger, bolder versions of themselves. And so that's just kept mushrooming. It mushroomed out from individuals through to volunteers, into organizations, into businesses, into universities, schools. It's just the same idea. And what we found is wherever you focus on human beings and how human beings work, where their fears come from, where their joy comes from, where their power comes from, and you help them to harness their power and to release their fears, they go on to do amazing things. So whether that's an individual or a whole team of CEOs running banks, right? It doesn't matter, because you release them from the human hive, they just go off and do stuff in a more efficient and effective way. So I don't know where it's going to go next. It just keeps growing. That's the lovely thing about the hive. A new person buzzes in with whatever their needs are and whatever they can support other people with, and they just sort of kind of cross-pollinate and something new bubbles up and it joins to the hive and more people want to come to that bit, and then it grows into something new. It's kind of organic. It grows with the people who come. So I think for me, that was always the vision, is that I don't have a vision. I'm living it. I'm experiencing it. I want it to grow in real time out of what needs to be done right now.
Yes, but I completely agree that that's totally the case, that it's grown really organically and naturally. But I do remember also from quite early on, there's been a vision of growth in the things that we've talked about. I mean, I remember like the way that Kate and I, to a certain extent, like to plan is by drawing, lots of drawings, like, and you know, there's, we, you know, all our archives are full of little drawings of things that we've done, particularly Kate's little drawings. And very early on, we had this kind of drawing of a pathway with different bits of training along the pathway that was going to end up in, you know, in empowerment. It's always been about how do we empower people to take action on their own. We recognized really early on we were doing a very specific action, but very, very quickly we knew that it, you know, we weren't enough to to really fulfill, like find a solution to that action. So we needed other people to come along and take their part of the action. And it's there's always been a kind of global element to it. It's there in the drawings. You can see it. It wasn't fixed or anything. It wasn't like we're gonna take over the world with the human hive. That was never the conversation between us. But it was more than just let's go and do this one little thing.
Yeah, it was always going to grow. Just don't always know in which direction.
And I think that comes from the pair of you always thinking like on a ginormous scale. Like I always get the feeling that you don't really see barriers and hurdles. There is always a way to work it out. In fact, you just go around smashing them the whole time. Would that be fair, really, to say?
I've been smashing them. I think it's actually
gliding gently through any gaps.
Yeah, or going around them or something. It's like
occasionally making a little bit of space with my elbows, but I try not to do that quite so much now. I'm not as young as I used to be. I try and be a little bit more elegant about how I get over the hurdles. But yeah, if you present me with a hurdle, then that's a lovely challenge.
Yes.
Which is again part of the ethos of the human hive, isn't it? What have been some of your like key moments or highlights? Have you got anything that shoots to mind?
Oh, wow.
I think one of the biggest moments for me was right at the beginning. We went to Calais for the first time and I was sitting down with this group of people and I'd never met them before. We didn't share much language, but we shared tea. And we just kind of sat in this shared space. And I vividly remember a sensation in my heart that I had never felt before. It was like I could tune into a vibration. And it still brings tears to my eyes now when I think about it. And just something happened to my heart. It opened. And I knew that what I was doing was something that I had probably needed to do my whole life, but never known that I could. And maybe never thought that I should, that it was my place or whatever. And so I still remember that. And I'm still much more tuned into it than I ever was before. I'm now much more proud of being heart-centered. And I'm happy to stick my flag in the ground and say, it's all about what happens in the heart. And I wasn't before. I think before then I used to try to just hide it in whatever I was doing, be a little bit embarrassed to be heart-centered, that it wasn't practical or that I was naive and all of those things. But I have got so much more done in my life since I stuck that flag in the ground and said, I'm going to just forge heart forwards through this world. So that was a big one for me because it has undoubtedly changed my life. And it came from those young men who could have been hiding their hearts and they weren't. They were sitting there with their hearts wide open and I could feel it. So I suppose I'm still in touch with a few of them actually. And so I shall say thank you to them again for that.
Thanks, Kate. That's lovely. I love what you're saying about being heart-led. And I'm very much the same. And I know exactly what you mean when you kind of feel embarrassed by it. Not embarrassed, but it's just the world's very logical and practical and cold at times. And it's vulnerable to be heart-led as well. So... yeah, you kind of, yeah, you just made me feel like I want to go out and be a bit more like that. Thank you. Darren, have you got any before I go all smushy?
Well, there are many, many moments. The thing that comes to mind mostly is the training that we did in Italy in 2017 when Kate and I went to the small community of Sarteano in Tuscany, where I already had connections and friends, and they invited us to come and bring our training. And I remember standing in this big room in a Tuscan town with 35 people, most of whom did not speak English, local Italians, young men from West Africa who had settled in the area, were settling in the area, people who worked for some different NGOs, and we led our training. We led our full training. And our first day is all about you and how you show up. And the second day is all about learning how to share your skills. And what we usually do is teach through a making a Syrian salad, a fattoush salad. And we had five tables of people making fattoush salads. Talking in Italian and discussing how the different salads should be and how we should make it, and people going around and tasting things, and you know, just this incredible buzz in the room of different people with different languages and different backgrounds, but making food together and sharing food. And then we laid out this long table down the middle of the room, and everyone brought their, we had these five fattoush salads, and everyone sat down and ate the salad together. And we'd done it several times before, but there was something really amazing about that experience, because most of these people would not have come together before. So I think that was the time when I really recognized the value of what we were doing, because we were creating third spaces where people could meet, and meet on the human level, meet through sharing skills and through sharing experiences. And we were really, really lucky to be welcomed into a space by Susie Alexander, who has a farm in the Tuscan hillsides outside of town. And she invited everyone to come and bring their skills to the town so we could have the event together and really get to meet each other. And all these 25 young West African men showed up, and these local Italians, and we made pizza together, and we made minestrone soup, and we played football, and we swam in the pool, and we learned African dancing, and we did drawing. And that was the first time that some of those young men said, the first time that they've been met as equals since they arrived in that country. Had the experience of being able to interact with children, you know, to someone to trust you to hold your baby, hold their baby in your arms. I mean, all those really human things that we don't think about that happen when the barriers break down and we share food together and we share space together that wouldn't happen outside. And then an amazing project grew out of that, and totally grew up. Kate and I left and went home, and this project grew on its own because of the relationships that had been built. And it's still going. Those relationships are still going. And every time that I see a post about Loopla Loop, which is the name of the project that grew, on Facebook, it just makes me feel so, and a bit like Kate was saying, you know, my heart opens, I feel emotion, I feel warm, I feel, you know, I feel like I feel incredible. I had won some very tiny part in helping that to happen. So that's my big memory, I think.
That's neat. Both of you have mentioned tea drinking, cooking together, and this whole eat, make, play thing is a big theme for you, isn't it, in everything that you do?
Yeah, it's about shared experiences. Something, I first noticed this when I was doing school trips with kids. And I would take these teenagers, and I would take some of the troublesome ones as well. And other members of staff and my colleagues would say, what on earth are you doing taking that Herbert off on a school trip? And there was something that would happen when we would have an experience that we shared. There was a bond that, you know, everybody kind of knows this, right? You kind of know this on an intuitive level. When you go through a challenge with somebody else and you come out the other side, there's a bond that forms. And it doesn't always have to be a challenge. Sometimes it can be sharing a cup of tea or sharing soup or sharing cooking something. It's something magical about working together to a common goal that you then share the fruits of. It's just, I don't know why, I haven't researched it enough. I'm sure somebody on the planet has and is going to tell me what it is that happens on a cellular level for human beings, but you can feel it. You can feel it happening and you just know it does. So we put together these experiences that you share that pretty much never miss the mark. And one of them is making a salad together. And you think, like, what's special about chopping up a cucumber, right? Like, duh, there's not special. And yet there's something about the slicing of the cucumber and the chopping of the radishes and the deciding who's going to do what and the fuss and the muddle and then the sharingness of it that breaks down boundaries. By the time that salad reaches the table, you know who's got a dog, who's got a cat, who's come from here, who's come from there, whose granny knows how to make this, that and the other. Yeah. It's like you've been friends for 100 years. Whereas if you try to bring people together and teach them something in a kind of antiseptic environment. That doesn't happen. So the need to communicate, the need to achieve something, just removes a lot of those barriers. People don't feel self-conscious anymore. And when they stop feeling self-conscious, they reach towards one another and they connect, and the human part of themselves can come up, bubble up to the surface. When people are going through big life challenges, that part of you, that human part of you that makes jokes and likes poetry, and it goes into the background, and the panicky part of you is in the foreground. And if you've been through a refugee experience or something very traumatic in your life, then that part of you gets buried deeper and deeper and deeper. And something so small as making tea or making a salad together or playing a game together can just bring it to the front and allow you to feel fully human again. And it works everywhere, every time. It just works.
It is, it's neurobiological. It is, it's wired into us. It's, I think that the part of it is this idea about parallel play, is that it's easier to have a conversation with someone that you're not staring at. Something, it's easier to have a conversation when your hands are busy. So when you're chopping the tomatoes, or the conversation can flow because the rest of you is busy doing something, you're there with a purpose. I think it's harder sometimes to make these connections when there's no purpose around the connection. As a collective, we become purposeful. We're creating something together. So then there's always something to talk about. But we do things in a way that are not prescriptive. There's no right or wrong way of doing the things we talk about. When we talk about eat, make, play, every one of those activities is something that could go in any direction. We want them to be open enough that you can bring yourself into it. So we're not telling you off if the button's not sewn on correctly to your sock puppet, or you've not cut the tomatoes in exactly the right way. There's none of that. It's like, well, here's a template for creating something, and let's see how you create that. You know, I talked about the Italian training, and there were five different salads, and there were five different salads, even though the ingredients were exactly the same. The way that they were chopped up, or the way they were put together, or the way that the people felt about how they should be presented was different. That's the human thing. That's the bubbly thing. And it's messy. I think Kate and I, the reason we work together well is we're not scared of mess. We're comfortable with mess. We're comfortable with uncomfortable. We're comfortable with things not going the way that we thought they were going to go. And I think that we exist in a world where people have become very uncomfortable with things not going the way that they planned them to go. And therefore things get more and more rigid and less human. And there's less space for people to bring themselves. And there's less space for people to experiment and try something. You know, you don't create something new without making a mess and making a mistake. Like, and the human hive is full of that. That's why it's human. It's messy. It's full of mistakes. It's full of wrong turns. It's full of circular thinking and dead ends and things, but it's always moving in a direction, because the most important thing about the human hive is the relationships that you build. That's what we're building all the time. We're building connections between people.
And I guess it's about kind of that letting go of control as well. So all those salads, people bring different things. There are a million different ways of doing something. And that is a lovely, messy world. It's just like not tidying humans. It's a great leveler, isn't it? So one of the questions I was going to ask was like, how does that work across education, volunteering and business? I guess I'm a little bit fascinated in the business side of things. I kind of can see it in the volunteering and the education side of things. So how does that look in business?
Well, actually, let's begin in education, because education is the route into how we work in business. I'm going to hand over to Kate, because the education piece is actually key to everything.
In very simplistic terms, it's the how and not the what. It ain't what you do, it's the way that you do it. And that's what gets results. Mm-hmm. And so when you have that mindset, when you feel confident to try something, knowing that it may or may not work, when you are confident to transfer what's been successful in one realm into a new realm and give it a go. When you know how to ask for help, when you reach the end of your zone of tolerance, when you reach the end of your comfort zone, how do you keep stepping forward, right? And how do you ask for people to stand next to you until you feel strong again? All of those things are just as applicable in a classroom as they are in a boardroom. You know, if you just do the same thing all day, every day for the rest of your life, it's quite difficult to get a lot of meaning out of that. And human beings like to have meaning. So it works on a school level. Instead of me telling you what to do, like, we've got a goal, we want to learn about this stuff, here's some tools that can help you, here's some books and some human beings with some answers, and there's the internet, and I'm here to help you if you get stuck. And in a boardroom, it's like, these are the goals that we need to meet. These are the sales targets that we've got to hit. These are the people that are available to you. And these are the tools we have at our disposal. How are you going to use them in the best way? It's always the same. How are you going to channel what you've got, channel your strengths towards it? And how are you going to mitigate for the bits that are underdeveloped? You know, how are you going to get over the hurdles or through the gaps or, you know, bridge the divides? And they're always problems to solve. And when you believe in your belly, completely believe that any problem can be solved if you go at it in the right way, then you'll get there. And so the framework we've designed just helps you to do that. It gives you just enough of a guide. Like, start from here. Start with what's going on in your environment. Start with noticing, and then notice how that makes you feel. And then choose where you're going to respond, where you're going to get the most bang for your buck. And then make sure you start asking the other people involved if this is what they need, if they have any ideas. Look around you for help. Look around you for things that have been done by other people. And give yourself a chance to sit with it before you move on. What from that experience do you want to carry forward into the next experience? And what from that experience would you rather never see again? And then what are you going to do next? It's a way of thinking and being and reflecting. It's a way of making what goes on under the hood invisibly visible, and therefore learnable and changeable. That's a very long answer.
No, that was great. Like, what does this do how does this kind of shift people's perception of risk? It must change that. It must change people's being risk averse.
What we call it is the co-evolution cycle. And the idea, I mean, like, the co part of it is what's really important. It's the fact you're not on your own. So I believe that we have built a world that's full of walls and barriers and silos. Like, every school or every institution and every business is its own thing, doing its own thing. And that's not the reality. Actually, everything is connected to everything. But if we're only thinking about ourselves, we only see a small part of the picture. And actually, it's very difficult to evolve fully as a human being or even as an organization without recognizing the context in which you're sitting. So if you know that it's not just your risk on your own, that you're doing this with other people, that you are collaborating, like truly collaborating. I mean, I'm always amazed by how often that word is used, but how little it's actually understood. Because collaboration is it's not just doing something with someone else. It's constantly sharing ideas and iterating and listening and changing direction and building as you go along, constantly responding to need and the environment around you. So we've created this framework that keeps reminding you to do that. It keeps reminding you to check into how you feel. Like, feelings are really important part of this. It's because most of the information you get around the world comes from your gut up rather than from the brain down. And if we're not listening to how we feel, then a whole load of behaviors start coming up that sabotage what you're doing. So we're checking into how we feel. We are looking at the world around us and we're responding. We are communicating and sharing ideas together. We are, as Kate says, we're checking in to make sure that what we've done is what we really wanted to do before we continue to move forward again. And we're, and that's built into the process. So we don't, it's something we talk about a lot in our training, is that don't decide now what this is going to be. Don't decide on what the outcome is because you haven't started yet. Have an idea about what you want to be working. What's the problem that you're working on? But don't decide what that solution is until you start the work. So in a way, the risk becomes less because you're not hanging everything on this one outcome that you've decided beforehand. The outcome could be really different. I think that's how you manage risk. And you asked before, like, why is this important for business? Because I think that the world of business is in, just like the whole world, but is in this transition phase right now. We have a whole new generation that are coming into the workplace, and their values are very, very different. And their values are much more collaborative. They're much more about meaning. They're much more about what can I bring and what is my place within this? They don't want to just disappear into the organization. They want to have value. They want to have meaning. They want to contribute. So I mean, our framework and our way of working is really important for being able to bridge the gaps between the generations that appear, that now co-mingle in a workplace, and for business and institutions to really start to make a difference on the planet as a whole. Because if we're not looking at the wider world and the wider context and the whole network of communications and people and business and things that we're all involved with, then we're not going to solve our problems.
Sorry, I've been totally distracted. We're going to cut this bit out, aren't we? I assuming we're going to cut this bit out.
Leave it in. Leave it in. Life is messy, right?
I love this. Life is messy.
As much as I could chat to you two all day, I've got school to run. So I need to get back. I bunked off to come and talk to you two, and I need to be at the gate at the end of the day.
I love this. Wow. Okay. Well, I'm going to ask if you've got any shameless plugs then. So what are the big projects that are being launched for you?
For me, gosh, what am I doing? So I opened an alternative to school that's called The Hive, and it's in Dominican Republic. And if you are a family and you have children and you want them to grow up to be wholehearted and self-directing and purposeful little human beings, then you can bring them to The Hive. So you can come full time or you can visit. You can come for a 6-week stint and just see if it's for you.
First off, hats off, by the way, for opening up a school in the middle of a global pandemic. Just to shout out to that. That just shows what can be done. And is this one of many schools that will be opening? Are you just focusing on this one for now, or are there plans for...
This is the mothership, yeah.
As with all things, there is potential for it to grow and change shape and become something new. And yeah, I would love for there to be little hives all over the planet, all different with their own kind of personality, but all with kind of a shared DNA that's just all about being wholehearted and purposeful and connected. And yeah, everything's based around the sustainable development goals. So it's all really got a purpose. We're learning how to change the world by practicing changing the world and then measuring the impact. So like, how much impact does a 5-year-old have? And how much impact does a 15-year-old have? And how long does that impact last? Like, what's the difference? What's the point? You know that question when you're at school, you're like, what's the point of this stuff? Well, if anybody asks that in The Hive, I can tell them and I can really mean it. Like, the purpose of everything we're learning is to make life better for every single living thing on this planet. Like, and generally speaking, they want to get stuck into that. So it's, it's quite a thing.
So, Darren, what are your big projects coming up this year?
So one is Cause to Create. And Cause to Create is what happens next after you've been to Hive School, in a way. So I'm working with a great creative agency in London called Hey Big Man. And I met Mark Bennett, who's the director of Hey Big Man. We started talking, and he'd created this wonderful idea called Cause to Create, where he brought in people from the creative industries, you know, designers, marketers, web people who work on the websites, to bring their skills to support people going through the refugee experience. And he got loads of people involved, and it went a certain way. but it didn't ever develop bigger because of the time required for it. And he wanted to do something with Cause to Create, and I wanted to work with businesses, and actually it seemed like the perfect combination. And what we've been developing over the last year is an idea for a creative academy for people who want to get into, you know, what we're calling the creative industries, but, you know, people who want to think creatively. So whether you're coming from a music background or for a design background or a marketing or advertising background, we want to provide an opportunity for people from environments who wouldn't normally get access to those kinds of jobs to come in and train. So using the Human Hive training, using the whole Human Hive experience to build those skills and problem solve using creative design thinking. So again, working with the Sustainable Development Goals, thinking about how can I use the skills that I have in music or in creative design to make a difference on a bigger level. And then the other thing I'm doing with the Hive is around well-being. And we've gone right back to our roots, working with grassroots refugee-facing organisations across Europe, from Calais all the way through to Lebanon, to embed well-being practices and policies into the fabric of the organisation. We've seen, this is now 6 years on from the beginning of the current refugee crisis, as it's called, and many people are still volunteering or giving their time or developing small grassroots organizations to support across the continent. But there's no real practice of well-being, and therefore there's a huge amount of secondary trauma and burnout that has happened as a consequence of this. And it's something that Kate and I have been very concerned about from the very beginning of our time working in Calais. We saw it going on around us, and we wanted to protect our people from going through that experience. That's why the well-being nervous system part is such a fundamental bit of what we talk about. This project is going to be embedding that into the policies and practices of the organizations and training up a member of the team to become their well-being coordinator, the person who takes care of the safety, belonging and purpose of every member of the team. We believe very strongly, and we see it over and over again, that if you're working with a dysregulated, traumatized population, that trauma will affect your organization unless you know how to regulate and stabilize yourself. So this project is about, it's focused on the organization first, so the organization understands how to regulate itself, and then it can share that regulation and stabilization to the community around it. If not, then the trauma infects the organization, and then the organization is destabilized. So you either become like, you either radiate out safety so that the work is better, or you become destabilized. And we want to make sure that each of our organizations here are radiating out safety.
And also, I just have like this little sneaky feeling that this will be the stomping ground to then finesse this, and then in businesses and organisations we'll start seeing well-being coordinators.
That's my dream. That's our dream. Absolutely. That in every school, in every organisation, that there would be someone who holds that piece. Yeah.
I've got no doubt that will happen. Absolutely no doubt. So I look forward to that as well. We'll work that one in. Kate, we'll let you go and go and do the thing that you do best, back to class and be amazing.
Stand on the gate and put children on a bus. That's what I'm going back for.
Make it sound more glamorous.
Circle, started with a bus, ending with a bus.
Yes, oh my goodness.
Thanks for joining us. Come back next time for more stories of action from the Human Hive. Remember, you can become part of our community too by clicking the link in the show notes and joining our mighty network. Or why not take our e-course, How to Make a Difference? 2.5 hours of video training leading you through our 6 steps for taking direct action in the world with, not for, others. There's a $10 discount if you join through the link in the show notes, and you get automatic membership of the Human Hive community when you sign up. We look forward to meeting you soon. Get out there, be the difference, and join the evolution.